It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. International child welfare advocate Alicia Kozakiewicz has returned to her hometown of Pittsburgh. She's working to raise awareness of the dangers of social media and internet predatory crime, sharing her own story of abduction with school students and explaining how it led to the founding of the Alicia Project. She spoke recently with the 7th and 8th grade students at the Propel schools, and she joins us now in studio. Alicia Kozakiewicz, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us what happened to you in 2002. You were 13 years old and something unspeakable, something horrific happened. What was it?
When I was 13 years old, I was groomed and lured from my home by an internet predator who kidnapped me from my Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania home, right in Crafton Heights, and took me about 5 hours away to Virginia and held me captive in his basement dungeon, where I was raped and beaten and tortured. But I was miraculously rescued by the FBI, and I was truly so lucky. How I was rescued is that he had broadcast himself abusing me to other people online, and somebody saw this, essentially one monster coming forward about another. And he saw this awful video, and he ran out to a payphone, and he contacted law enforcement, and he had very little information, but he did have a screen name, and they were able to track down his IP address through that screen name, which led to me. Again, I am so, so lucky to be here.
How was he able to lure you out of your home? Obviously, he got you to trust him. How did he do that?
You have to remember that this was back in 2002, so there weren't any stories like mine. There were no internet safety seminars. There were no PSAs. This wasn't a conversation that we were having. And the internet was very new in the home. Most of my friends had it. Some of them didn't have a computer at all. So this was very new. And when my mother sat down and my father sat down and they said, don't talk to strangers, it didn't work online because these people weren't strangers. Many of them were friends from school and others I was introduced to through friends from school. So I felt very, very safe. And I was in my house and no one and nothing had ever hurt me there before. And my mom was there, my dad was there, my dog was there, my brother was there. I was completely safe. So that feeling of safeness led me to be very vulnerable. I was also a really shy, quiet kid. And online, I felt comfortable because I could express myself, truly express myself. I didn't have to hear myself talk. I could monitor my own words, and I felt more free to talk. And I met somebody through a friend online, and I thought he was a friend. I thought he was a boy around my own age, and he began to groom me. And grooming is so simple when you think about it, and it sounds totally crazy and sounds like it doesn't make any sense, but it does. Grooming is essentially just becoming a child's friend and telling them what they want to hear versus what they need to hear. Their mom, their dad, their teachers, whoever in their family and their lives will tell them what they need to do and what they need to hear, and then there's somebody there saying, everything you are is perfect, and it feels good. And I think it's hard to be a kid today. I think it's harder than it's ever been. Kids are told that they're not pretty enough, handsome enough, smart enough, fit enough, wealthy enough, that they're just not enough. And then there's somebody there that makes them feel like enough. They make them feel beautiful and important and special and unique. And after a period of 9 months of this intense grooming process, I agreed to meet this person, and I look back and I think, how did I make such a mistake? And then I realize I was 13. I was a kid, and kids don't make the best decisions, and kids do make mistakes, and that's sort of what kids do. And it's an adult's position and an adult's priority to never take advantage of or exploit those mistakes.
Did you spend a significant amount of time blaming yourself, or how did you work through that process of realizing that this really wasn't my fault?
I can actually remember the very day that I forgave myself. I was in LA and I was filming a safety documentary with the FBI. And my grandmother was on life support and my mom had to leave because the life support had to be pulled. So I was really emotional. And I sat down and I told my story without thinking about it, just said it. And afterwards, I remember talking to my mom and I said, this really wasn't my fault. I was a kid. I was duped. I was lied to. This wasn't my fault at all. Sure, I made a mistake, but that doesn't make it my fault. And that was really the day that I forgave myself.
How has this project played a role in your recovery?
Speaking out to children and working on legislation such as Alicia's Law, which is my namesake, has helped. It's helped me to find peace and healing by giving this horrible, awful, disgusting thing that happened to me a purpose. And that purpose is to help save other lives and help save other children and other families from going through what I have. And it's helped me to heal. It's been very cathartic. And while that's not for everybody, people often say to me, oh, I hope so-and-so eventually shares their story like this. You don't ever have to share your story. It's your story. And if you feel like you want to, that's fine. And yes, that might make you brave and strong, but so does just getting up and doing what you need to do that day after surviving a trauma. And whether it's an abusive relationship, a traumatizing childhood, a car accident, whatever your trauma may be, that you find your way through it, how you need to find your way through it, that we all heal so differently. People think that there's this timeline with healing. Oh, it's been 3 months. Oh, it's been 7 years. It's been this long. It's been that long. You should be fine. If you're not there, this isn't happening more. You're safe. And while you may be physically safe, your memories and your trauma, it stays with you. You experience nightmares. You experience flashbacks. There's so much that you go through after any sort of trauma, and that you need to take your own time to heal and do what helps you to heal, whether it's coloring or painting or singing or dancing or learning a new sport, whatever it is, that's what you need to find. And for me, it was speaking out.
Obviously, you were traumatized by this, as anybody would be. What was it like for you to, after you were rescued, to get back to normal life, the normal life of a kid of 13, going to school, hanging out with friends? Were you able to get past all of that nightmare as easily as it as you seem to have, or were there maybe challenges that people don't realize?
Oh, there were definitely a lot of challenges, some of them obvious, some of them not so. Getting back to life, it was not my life anymore, the one that I stepped into. People knew or thought they knew who I was. I would be introduced to somebody and like, oh, you're that girl, that's who you are. Or I'd go to the grocery store, or I'd go to the library, and people would constantly come up to me and say something. And sometimes they were very kind and they wanted to offer support or a hug. Sometimes they weren't so kind. But getting back to normal, it's not normal. It's really a new normal. And I love my life, and I loved being in high school, and I was really involved in high school, and I loved what I was doing, and I was speaking out at the time, and I was also like in musicals and all sorts of things, even though I have no talent with that stuff, I was doing it. But I found peace in healing, I guess. You just really keep going forward. And sure, you take steps back. You take so many steps back. But each time, it's easier to go back to where you were and then take a step forward. It might be one step forward and 100 steps back, but you're still moving forward.
You created the Alicia Project when you were 14. How has it evolved since its creation?
So when I first started speaking in schools when I was 14 years old, I was so shy, and it was hard for me to find my words. I was speaking to people who were sometimes younger than me, sometimes the same age, sometimes older than me. It was really difficult. But then I started having kids come up to me and say these, share their amazing stories, things that they've been through or things that they needed help with or that they weren't going to do now that they heard my story and that I made a true impact in their lives. But it has grown so much. It went from speaking in schools to speaking with parents to speaking with law enforcement to working on legislation and to doing a lot of work with the media. It's kept going. It's found its own path, and it's been an amazing journey.
As the number of social media apps accessible to children increases, what do you see as the challenges of child internet safety, particularly in 2016, as you know, things are ever changing?
It's nearly impossible to keep up with all the new applications and all the new programs, and that's not going to change. They're going to keep coming at us faster and faster and faster, and kids are going to keep moving from them and through them and figuring out which one they want to be on today and then moving to the next one. But that doesn't mean that we should give up and just say, oh, well, we can't keep up, so let's not focus on that. Let's not worry about that. As parents, you need to educate yourself on the apps. You can't use that excuse. You can't say, oh, well, we can't keep up with it. No, you have to do the research. You have to know the lingo and the language and the applications. You have to realize that there's applications on there that are for the pure purpose of hiding your photo or your kid's photos. And if your kid has two calculators, you might want to investigate that, because a lot of times those are an app where you put in a certain code and a number and it opens up and there's a ton of photos of your child that you would not approve of. And again, kids are kids and they're going to make mistakes. And I was told by a cop, and this was a heartbreaking thing to hear, but he had said that sexting is as normal to breathing as kids. What a generalization, but he would know. And from what I hear from kids and from what you see, it is. It's normalized, and it's normal for them to do, and they don't understand the repercussions. They don't understand that they can end up on the sex offender registry, that they can be charged with felonies, that it can really ruin their future, this simple mistake that they make, whether they're sending it to a boyfriend or a girlfriend or somebody that they met online. They can fall into so many different traps. Sextortion is so big now, where a child will send a photo and then that person will say, send another photo, send another photo, send another photo, and they can't get out of it. And as parents, here's what you really need to do. You need to sit down with your kid and say, I love you, and I need you to know that you can come to me with absolutely anything, and I will not judge you. I will not yell at you. I may want to raise my voice, but I won't, and I will treat you with respect because I respect you. And your kid needs to know that they can come to you, that your 12-year-old daughter can go to dad and say, Dad, I sent this picture of myself. It's a naked picture to somebody online, and now they're threatening to send it to my principal. Can you help me? And dad or mom need to not freak out, and the kid needs to know, and you need to tell your kid that that doesn't mean that you're going to take away their devices, you're going to yell at them. You're going to tell them that you're disappointed in them, that your job is to keep them safe. And that's what parents need to do. Parents need to focus on being a parent to keep their kids safe. Because kids, again, are going to make these mistakes. Good kids, not so good kids, curious kids, kids who've been around a lot. The kids make mistakes, and we need to be there to support and love them and help them. And as parents, that is your utmost job.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and I'm speaking with international child welfare advocate Alicia Kozakiewicz. She has been working to raise awareness of the dangers of social media and internet predatory crime, sharing her own story of abduction with school children, and recently spoke with students from the 7th and 8th grade at the Propel schools. What has been the most surprising part of your journey with the Alicia Project?
The reception, the positive reaction that I've gotten from so many kids and family. As a 14-year-old, I stood up there and I thought, I can't make a difference. I can't change the world. I'm just this little voice. What can I do? But I'm going to try, because it's always been about the one. But I've heard, again, so many stories from kids that they made a better decision or they got help because of something that I said. That I did reach the one, and that I reached many. And I hoped that I would, but to know that I have is, it's a wonderful feeling, again, to be able to take this horrible thing and move forward with it and give it a purpose.
Tell us about the results in the 9 states that have enacted Alicia's law with regard to arrests and child rescues.
So it's 14 states now.
14 states.
Yeah, it just passed in Maryland.
It's hard to keep up with the number, but that's great. That's great news.
Yeah, I love that I have to keep up with the number and that I have to try to remember all these different numbers and states. And I'm kind of embarrassed sometimes. I'm like, okay, but I realize that's a really good problem to have, is that it's happening so quickly and it's happening so much that it's hard to keep up with. But the results of it have been amazing. There have been children who have been saved from people who were abusing them and creating videos of them. There was one such case where somebody was planning to kidnap a child and murder them on video and then sell that for profit. It's saving lives, and all it's doing is helping fund the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Forces. It's giving them the funding, the resources, and the boots on the ground. There are 61 Internet Crimes Against Task Forces in the country. And that's it. So a lot of times it's one per state, and there's some states that don't even have one. So think about an entire state, and it's not, oh, that kind of crime doesn't happen there. That's what I think it's finally coming across to people, that this can happen in your community. So they all need to be funded, and they're so overworked and underfunded. It's incredible. And the work that they do is so important, because each and every single child just about has a device and needs to be protected. And they have multiple devices. They have gaming systems. They have laptops. They have iPads. They have their phone. They need to be protected. And these are the people who have the ability to do that. And they want to do that. I had somebody say, well, why don't the cops just work harder? Why don't they do this more? Like, that's not that. It's not that they don't want to do it. It's that they can't. It's that they literally do not have the manpower and the people to go rescue these children. And it's not children who are, most of them have not been kidnapped as I was. Many of them are the children who are being abused at home or with people that should love, trust, and guide them and are abusing them and torturing them.
We've been talking with Alicia Kozakiewicz. She is an international child welfare advocate and returned to her hometown of Pittsburgh to speak with 7th and 8th grade students at the Propel Schools about her work to raise awareness of the dangers of social media and internet predatory crime, sharing her own story of abduction with those children. And she shared her story with us today on Essential Pittsburgh. And I want to thank you so much for being with us and sharing your story and for the work that you're doing.
It's just so wonderful that the Propel Schools had me come in and speak. They actually brought in so many kids. They brought in all the 7th and 8th graders that they have to hear my story, and their kids were, they were so respectful, and they had the best questions. They were just such a fantastic group to speak to, and I feel honored that I got to come here and speak with them. So thank you so much, Propel, for having me.
And if people want more information about the Alicia Project or Alicia's Law, where should they go?
They can go to aliciaproject.org or follow Alicia Project on Facebook or on Twitter.
Alicia Kozakiewicz, again, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your story today on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
And more Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA.